Welcome to the podcast of the first ever episode of Left, Right and Centre.
Which I believe is on the internet.
Yeah, it's on the internet, downloadable off the tubes and the things. Presumably, if you're listening to it, you've already downloaded it, so you already know how podcasts work. I'm not going to explain them. Something about
But
RSS.
I don't know how they work, Casey.
Well, I'll show you later, okay?
Thanks. Yeah, that's right. That's right. We can push on. Go
push on. Push on. This show goes to air every Tuesday at midnight. It's part of Student Radio on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. I'm Casey, who you've just heard is Chris.
I'm Chris, yeah.
Yes, that's Chris. We're two of the hosts of the show.
The ones who are, you know, here on time, actually, you know, ready to do the recording.
Yeah.
The others are Mateo. Mateo, he's off doing some sort of play crappy thingamy thing.
Yeah, being an artist.
And Tim, well, he's probably sleeping.
Knowing Tim, he is definitely sleeping. This is the first episode of Left, Right and Centre. It aired on Tuesday, the 3rd of March.
At midnight.
You should definitely listen in live every other week.
Well, because I mean, you get the music.
Yeah, we play music that you're not going to hear.
You're not going to hear the music.
You're not going to hear all the jokes that I've edited out of this podcast.
All of the jokes are gone. There are no jokes left.
All of my jokes.
Why did you edit out your jokes? They weren't funny enough.
No. So that then when I wanted people to have to listen to it and go, oh, that Casey, he's not very funny. But then if they actually then make the effort, listen live, it's hilarious.
So what you're saying is they'd be underwhelmed by the podcast and then by comparison, you're hilarious.
Absolutely.
Some people need that help, I guess, to get the humour.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to be perceived
what
as
we
funny.
Want is, I want Left, Right and Centre to be an acquired taste. I don't want fans from the get-go. So, you don't agree?
I'm stunned.
You're stunned.
I mean, why wouldn't we want fans from the beginning?
Exactly.
You just said you didn't.
I don't.
But I'm saying, why wouldn't we?
Because I don't want just people. I don't want people to jump on the bandwagon. The Left, Right, and Centre bandwagon.
So you want it to be like a cult radio show?
Oh yeah, niche market, baby.
Fine.
Here's the first episode of Left, Right, and Centre. Enjoy.
Student radio may contain coarse language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Left, Right, and Centre on Student Radio, Radio Adelaide 101.5.
The world premiere, the hotly anticipated world premiere.
It is indeed the world premiere, and
there's celebrations all over the world.
Celebrations all over the world, yeah. A lot going on in Venezuela. A good friend, Hugo Chavez, he's got a lot to say. Also, I've been in contact with Silvio Berlusconi, who is the famous Italian politician, entrepreneur, real estate and insurance tycoon, bank and media proprietor, sports team owner and songwriter, and the current Prime Minister of Italy in his third term in office. And his corporation, Mediaset, they own three television stations, which comprises 50% of the national viewing audience. Now, he's playing our show live across Italy with dancing girls accompanying, one on each of his three channels, different colours. So if you like green dancing girls,
channel almost one. Like grid girls.
Well, no, because all of his, they actually have lots of, across he has mostly news programmes, but they've got a twist, which is they have news and then they have dancing girls in the middle.
Okay, like to break up the news story.
It's really, I mean, like, it's a bit of a distasteful twist, actually. A touch.
No, actually, I have to say thanks from all of us, Sylvia. Nice touch from you.
Exactly.
So,
moving on to more things more topical to today's show. Today, we've got a jam-packed show today. And I promised myself I would never say that on radio, but I just did. Jam-packed show, we went to O Week last week, Adelaide University O Week. We talked to Patrick McCabe, local issues sub-editor for On D. We talked to Lavinia Emmett-Gray, the Adelaide University Union president. Also in the show, we'll talk about McDonald's. What do we talk about McDonald's for?
Well, they've actually changed their pricing structure lately. Basically, what's happening is they're going from a structure based on the cost of food to one based on demand, and that has some interesting issues which we'll bring up.
We're also going to have a bit of a chat about executive pay, executive remuneration, especially with the Pacific Brands deal going down and Sol Trujillo retiring.
Yeah, it's been a furor, a palaver, big controversy, and of course we have segments that you'll come to know and love, rapid fire news, all sorts of stuff, and a couple of nice songs as well for you guys.
But first up, we've got something that Tim's been looking into about a seat in Queensland. Interesting election stuff, Tim.
Yeah, this will start off sounding pretty boring, everybody. Bow Desert, which is a state electorate in just southwest of Brisbane. The election there has actually become pretty interesting. Now, Pauline
this is
Hanson...
The state election.
Coming up at the end of March.
Does sound pretty boring so far, Tim.
Yeah, but Pauline Hanson, and get this, Warwick Capper, have decided to nominate themselves as independent candidates, and this has gotten pretty interesting.
In the same seat.
In the same seat.
Everyone knows who Warwick Capper is, but just in case they don't.
Warwick Capper is the 49-year-old former Australian rules football star, and now he makes his living as a male stripper. So, yeah.
So let's come to Warwick Capper a little bit later. What did Pauline Hanson's have to say about her nomination?
She launched her campaign yesterday. Her political leanings have not changed. She riled against Queensland jobs going overseas, declaring that free trade has destroyed our country. Our work is going overseas because the government has allowed this to happen. She also made quite an embarrassing blunder where she referred to the current Liberal National Party leader, Lawrence Springborg, as Borbidge, confusing him with the former Queensland Premier, Robert Borbidge.
Oops.
Sounds like it's a bit of an insult, really. You're a Borbidge, Tim. I'm not sure what it means, Tim, exactly, but...
We had to look it up. We don't know what she was talking about.
It just sounds like Ms. Hanson is prone to really the same gaffe that
memory,
she always
memory
was.
Memory lapses.
Indeed, and to paraphrase that wonderful South Park quote, it's like, they took our jobs.
Yep, they took our jobs. But just in case you didn't think this would get much funny, it gets better. Warwick Capper, this evening, 7:45, the Associated Press has reported that Warwick Capper would not actually be standing in the seat of Beaudesert. It seems that... While he was talking to reporters about what a good job he was going to do for this electorate, nobody bothered to put his application in by the midday deadline. So it turns out he's not running. So
just didn't happen for him. Like that episode of The Simpsons where Bart just thinks he'll become class president. No one votes for him. He just thinks he's got it won.
Well, he wasn't even turning up.
He just assumed he'd be on the paper. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Did he have platforms? Did he have policies?
Well, Tim, I actually think you mentioned that he's now a male stripper, right? But I thought that he was going to work for Zoo Magazine.
Yeah, this is one of the interesting parts of this story. Is in fact, Zoo Magazine, who are getting a fair bit of publicity out of this now, I think it's fair to say they haven't done too badly out of this particular fiasco. They were keen to point out today that although they were going to send some Zoo bikini models to his campaign launch, which was scheduled for tomorrow, they're not actually responsible for the mix-up. I think they're pointing the finger at Warwick Capper's manager.
So is what you're saying that Warwick Capper's platform was bikini models?
Well, I'm not sure. I think the only policy announcement was that he said that the people of Beaudesert would be looking for something different. I'm not sure whether that's much of a platform.
Pornography?
Well, I don't know.
Is that different though, really? But
I think he should get in contact with Silvio Berlusconi, perhaps.
Oh, maybe. He could pull some dancing girls for him.
No,
it doesn't matter anymore because he can't run. Yeah, no, Berlusconi's interested in power.
The dancing girls are ours. But Dirk, if you could tell us some more about Mr. Warwick Capper.
Yeah, we've got some interesting facts. I'm afraid most of them are variations on a theme. Warwick Capper in 2006 released the X-rated movie Warwick Capper Uncut, featuring himself and his 25-year-old girlfriend. Now, I think this...
How old was he at the time?
He was actually 45, I think, 44, 45.
No. Look, don't do maths on radio, guys.
Yeah, especially me. But the kicker for that story is the movie was 69 minutes long.
It's a good effort for a middle-aged gentleman such as Mr. Capper.
Pushing the upper bound of middle age, I think, 40, 49 now.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's still in the peak of his physical endurance. He challenged Jeff Fenech to a fight,
yeah,
I believe.
Jeff Fenech, former three-time world boxing champion, a challenge to a fight.
So Warwick Capper, Pauline Hanson, well, no longer Warwick Capper, running in the state of, the seat.
Seat of Beaudesert. I mean,
there we go.
Of course, we're planning on giving you, weekly updates about the amazing sparring match between these two political heavyweights, but there really isn't going to be too much to say.
We'll keep our eyes peeled, but maybe we can come back to Pauline Hanson's seat bid. We'll be right back after this.
This is Student Radio at Adelaide Uni. On 101.5.
Now, during the show, during Left, Right and Centre tonight, and every week from now, you'll be able to write in to us via email, via the Facebook group as well. We've set up a Facebook group, Left, Right and Centre. You can join that and jump on the discussion boards. You can also email us at leftrightandcentre@live.com.au. We'd love to hear your comments and feedback. You can also email us, not necessarily during the show, after the show as well. All right. Patrick McCabe is the local issues sub-editor for OnD, which is Adelaide University student newspaper, and I spoke to him earlier last week at O Week. I asked him to tell me a bit of background information about OnD.
OnD is a student-run newspaper. It's been running for 76 years, I think, and it's completely controlled and written about by students, and each section is run by sub-editors, and that's what I'm doing this year. I'm going to be one of the sub-editors for the local issues section.
What was your motivation for applying to be one of the sub-editors?
I've always enjoyed writing, so that was probably the primary motive, I guess. But also, I think I've enjoyed reading OnD in my years at uni so far, and I think it seems to me like a good way to get involved with sort of the uni life and culture. And it seems like, in some ways, it's sort of important to keep it going. It's a good sort of independent media source, I guess, and something an alternative place for people to gain news, opinion, information, rather than just, you know, the Advertiser or the Australian, I guess.
You mentioned you were sub-editing the local issue section. Can you tell us a bit about what you plan to write about in that section?
Well, I think I'm taking local issues as a fairly wide sort of definition. I'm going to write about a few sort of state government issues. For instance, Mike Rann's criminal intelligence laws have just come into force. There was recently a High Court decision passed down about that, and it's a pretty interesting issue, I think. So I'm going to write a bit about that soon. And also just social issues with special significance to students. And also just more light-hearted articles about everyday problems confronting students, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think Jared, the other sub-editor, and I are definitely into that side of things as well. So, yeah.
So it's about taking the students' angle in some respects on these issues, is it?
Yeah, it's not so much always, you know, state issues. There can be wider issues, but they should be. We're going to focus on issues that have a particular significance to students. So, obviously, things like this new student services fee that's coming in as a sort of substitute, if you will, for VSU, and also more sort of general issues like abortion and things like that. I think it would be interesting to do stuff like that, which obviously those kind of issues can have particular significance to students, I think. So, yeah.
So the second issue, the festival issue, I believe, of OnD, released the second week of semester, second week of the academic year. What can you give us a sneak preview? What have you written about?
That one's a fairly humorous article. Well, I think it's humorous. Some lighthearted articles about, again, starting, sort of continuing the theme from O Week of new people, new first years starting at uni. But also we've got a few articles on the Fringe, a preview of the Adelaide Uni Choir Society's performance at the Fringe, which should be good. And also some interviews with local performers, a local comedian, and a look at how local businesses profit from the Fringe and whether they agree with the idea of the recent decision for it to be an annual thing, and whether they feel that it would be best to stretch, whether it's the Fringe is a good idea having all these acts at one part of the year and the rest of the year being fairly quiet, or whether it would be better to sort of spread out things across the whole year. So, yeah.
So if people want to get the whole story on these issues, where can they pick up their issue of OnD?
Anywhere around campus, Casey. The Union Hall, the Union Building are all good places, but it should be anywhere around uni.
Patrick McCabe, local issues sub-editor for OnD, talking to me during O Week.
Hi, this is Liz from the Games Club. We're down at O Week on the lawns at the Bar Smith, and we're here for O Week, and this is Student Radio.
Tame Impala there with Desire Be, Desire Go, which is the first song from their self-titled EP.
Quite a young band, Tame Impala, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty much, well, maybe not our age, Casey, you and me, but the age of Tim and Chris.
The older members of the crew.
Yeah, they're just one of those bands sort of makes you think, you know, had we put ourselves something, maybe we could have been something as well.
But, you come to this late stage in your life and you think, alas, you haven't achieved anything.
Over the hill, indeed.
I've achieved plenty.
Well, Chris has achieved something, but that's good for you, Chris.
It
good is, for you.
It's we pretty good for you. We are on the radio.
We are on the radio. McDonald's have recently are changing their pricing structure for some of their menu items currently. It's causing a bit of consternation.
That's right. Basically, up to this point, their pricing is based on the cost of food. So if the price of 100% Australian beef goes up, so does the price of a Big Mac. A document, leaked corporate document, however, suggests that they're going to change it to a demand-based pricing scheme, which will allow for a price increase between 1.8% and 3.3%, depending on demand and location. the consternation, the controversy, I suppose, is that some franchisees and documents have suggested that, in general, the poorer suburbs will say more, will pay more.
Why is that?
Particularly because there are several reasons, actually. One is that people who live in low-income areas have less access to things like transport and also alternatives, and also that simply that fast food outlets
are
concentrated.
Just what they're willing to pay.
But also fast food outlets are concentrated more in low income areas.
It's a matter of supply and demand, though, surely. I mean, if the demand is higher in those areas, then the prices will go up. I mean, that's the market mechanism working. That's the way, you know, the economy works in a country like Australia. I mean, I don't understand why this is such a big issue. If you ask me, it's a bit of a storm in a teacup. And I think, you know, what's happened now is a perfect example of why this thing isn't a really big issue. What's happened is there's been apparently a policy that's been introduced to increase prices on, you know, apparently on lower socioeconomic areas. And
but the leaked documents suggesting that the prices are being raised in these poorer suburbs because this is what they'll pay. They're willing to take this treatment.
Yeah, and that's the way the market works. I mean, where's the grievance there? I mean, that's where's the grievance? And if you've got a problem, what's your solution?
Well, I don't know. Studying economics, I could go into this into some depth.
Please
here.
Don't.
No, we will not. That has not worked out well in the past. But what actually interests me is the exact wording of this corporate document that a couple of newspapers in the eastern states got their hands on, which includes the words that McDonald's has the opportunity to introduce more aggressive price rises, which I feel is a very interesting use of language.
They identified that in particularly in 13, like in SA, they identified 13 particular outlets out of SA's 47, and the majority of those outlets are in low-income areas. And I think that suggests at least that even if it's not an intentional strategy to target them, that's going to be the impact. Mm. People in low-income areas will be paying more simply because either they don't have the alternative or they're willing to pay more. And regardless of whether, you know, that's how supply and demand works, is it morally correct?
Well, I think a lot of the claims, especially the Tizer's reporting, has been that this is some insidious plot by a global corporation to screw poor people. I mean,
it's an insidious plot by a global corporation to make more money.
And I don't think,
an effect of that is to screw poor people.
I don't think that's necessarily the intention. But regardless of that, if that's what's going to happen, doesn't it come to the same thing?
Go on.
Well, I was going to say that the economic success of such a ploy is going to be measured by, you know, obviously whether McDonald's is still making sort of the vast sums of money they're making, but really sort of the moral question is a more difficult one to answer. But then I say, if the people in the worse off areas are themselves buying similar amounts and spending similar amounts of money on McDonald's than they were before, then really, I don't know. I mean, they said the most dramatic price rise is in Happy Meals. They're increasing the price by some 16.5%, which sounds
very unhappy.
Well, it sounds unhappy indeed. Sounds very drastic until you realize that they're increasing the price by some 70 cents of your standard Happy Meal. I mean, you know,
I don't know how much a Happy Meal costs. Might say a $4 or $5 meal.
Well, yeah, it makes it $5 now, basically. Okay. $4.95. I mean,
it's a big jump.
It adds up over a period of time.
Well, I mean, if you're eating nothing but Happy Meals, yeah, it does.
But my point here is that if you can talk about moral problems and the insidious actions of evil global corporations.
No, Tim. Well, we're not talking about the insidious actions of evil corporations. That's not what I'm saying.
Well, it's not necessarily what you're saying, Chris, but that certainly has been the implication of I think, some of the media coverage of this issue. But my point is that this is a perfect example of how the market system works, that these kinds of price rises have been exposed, and the market will deal with them accordingly. And if people want to make a statement, then they're entitled to exercise their consumer sovereignty and not buy the product. That'll push the prices down and we'll fix the whole thing.
Okay, Tim. Well, whether or not we accept that, I think in support of what you're saying, I should actually point out that there's been some research into other areas. The Boston Globe did some around Buffalo, which suggested that grocery stores in lower-income areas charge 10 to 15% more simply because they can. There's less competition. Again, people have less access to cars, which means they can't price shop as much. And so, I mean, you could also raise the question as to whether it's right to single out McDonald's, you know, for particular criticism, or whether Again, well, it's just...
I would say, I don't know whether the criticism is to be levelled at the private sector at all. I mean, if this is an issue of unsatisfactory competition levels, then that's a matter for regulators.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, the economics of this with the people in worse-off suburbs, I won't use jargon here, guys, sorry. It's just that, you know, obviously less disposable income available to people in the worse-off suburbs. It means that, you know, their choice of product is decreased. They just can't choose from as many, and so suppliers, like, for example, McDonald's in this case, or grocery stores, say, they know that they have just, you know, more room, really, and they really can charge more because they know that there's really no substitute available for people of lower incomes.
I think we might let the educated economist have the final word on that one.
Yevol to the glory of the free market, people.
Absolutely.
Let's go now. We've not had much agreement there, I don't think. But let's go now to this.
Which is good.
This is good, yeah. We're an argument show.
I like this.
You like this? Chris likes this. Let's go.
Live from the North Terrace studios of Radio Adelaide. Left, right and centre newsflash.
In what has been described as a crisis of faith for University of Adelaide students, a new club has failed to tie its membership drive to binge drinking or pub crawls. Even though the club has only gained 9 members in a week of recruitment, prominent figures from other clubs have accused the new club of being dangerous and promoting un-Australian values like sensible drinking habits. The club's public relations officer, Sue Donim, said that,
"We are simply attempting to find dedicated, long-term members who are actively engaged with our club's field of interest."
In reply, several clubs have made the point that their members are also dedicated to their club's purpose: drinking. The real controversy started, however, when several clubs announced a joint push for the organisation to be banned, declaring that
"The pub crawl is an important tradition in the life of any uni student. For this reason, clubs are obliged to promote the excessive consumption of alcohol at multiple venues throughout the course of a single night in their role as student groups. This new club is a menace to the fabric of student life that will stop at nothing to destroy everything that we value about the university experience."
The statement was met with astonishment by members of the organisation, who claim that the other clubs are drunk with power and beer. Nonetheless, the new club looks to be on increasingly shaky ground after several businesses weighed into the debate. A joint association of companies composed of pubs, clubs and hospitals have themselves declared that they find this new organisation very threatening.
"We rely almost exclusively on student binge drinking to keep us afloat,"
Adelaide Private Hospital Director John Rigby explained. In a move presumably aimed at resolving the conflict, Adelaide University Union spokesman Alexander Thomas has offered a compromise.
"The organisation concerned maintains that it has done nothing wrong by omitting binge drinking and 3 beer coupons from its membership drive. While we do not wish to weigh into the debate, we feel that a compromise could be reached. Perhaps the organisation would be interested in sponsoring our recent purchase of a bouncy castle for use by students."
While the suggestion has been declared novel by some, others have suggested that the purchase of the bouncy castle in the first place was a laughable waste of funds by the AUU, who were no doubt on a pub crawl themselves when they had that particular flash of inspiration.
We've got people writing in. Remember, you can email us in leftrightandcentre@live.com.au or join the Facebook group Left, Right and Centre. Andrew, a listener, wrote into the Facebook group saying, "All your talk of Maccas made me hungry." So
that wasn't the intention of...
If you write an equally or maybe even more humorous comment, you can also be read out live on Radio
Adelaide. Or even a deep and meaningful comment maybe about McDonald's.
No, it's not live, though, because he posted minutes ago.
That's true.
All right, guys, I'm going to hit you with some rapid-fire news.
Awesome.
Whether a glass is viewed as half full or half empty depends on your genes, British scientists claim. Researchers at the University of Essex found that variations in a mood-altering gene influence whether people take a pessimistic or optimistic view of the world. Those with a long version of the gene tend to have a sunny disposition, dwelling on positive aspects of life, and deliberately playing down the negatives. Unconfirmed reports suggest that those wearing Armani jeans view the glass as half full, while those wearing piping hot jeans are unlikely to see the glass at all. Matteo, how do your jeans affect your disposition?
Well, of course, of my several pairs of jeans to choose from, currently wearing my nice dark blue straight shooter Wranglers, and have to say, no glass at all. Can't see any glass here.
Are you serious?
Well,
they're nice jeans. You should be.
I can actually see a glass as well.
It's not my glass, and
no,
what's that in the glass?
It's the glass.
Oh, okay.
I don't think the point is whether there's a glass or not. It's the contents of the glass.
I'm a glass half empty kind of guy. I think when you've got a glass of milk there, it's got to be half empty.
I'd like to point out at this point.
No.
We were thinking about this earlier, and I made the point, right? When I think of a glass as being half empty or half full, the glass is always full of milk.
And that's just madness, man.
And apparently this is bizarre.
Well,
is it full of anything? It's just a liquid.
It has to be full of something.
It's bizarre because no one contemplates what's in the glass.
I've always contemplated what was in the glass. It's always been milk.
It's a symbology, you know, like a symbolism, excuse me. That's not a word, symbology. That's, you know, that we have through the problem, the quandary.
Apparently Tim's crazy.
Mm.
Kissing has been banned at a London railway station as outbreaks of passion are threatening the punctuality of trains. No kissing signs have been put up at the station's taxi and drop-off zones. The company declared the signs were a light-hearted way of encouraging travellers not to clog the often crowded station. Tim, you often comment on the moral decay of society. Is this the opposite, then? The moral repair of society?
I think it is. I think this is the step in the right direction. You know, I think public displays of affection are disgusting. Personally, I'm disgusted when I see them, and I think the additional problems... caused by slowing down departures at rail stations are a real concern.
Tim, are you for real? You're honestly suggesting that kissing slows down trains?
I am disgusted.
You think the train stops and waits for passengers to board while they're snogging?
No, can I just say, guys, this is definitely a step in the right direction, because, of course, we all remember what happened before, which is just, you know, far more obscene and also resulted in a bit of death because, you know, they're on the railway tracks. Yeah, not nice.
Police in Ohio have charged a woman with child endangerment after she was seen both breastfeeding a youngster and talking on a phone while driving. Officer Michael Burke said authorities used a license plate number to locate the 39-year-old woman. He said that the woman admitted breastfeeding, saying she couldn't let her child go hungry. Should the mother have let the baby go hungry and die?
Definitely. Look, there's a whole heap of public safety concerns here, and the fact is, all these other people could have died. Who could have died? I mean, pedestrians, motorists... Theoretically, the mother could have died if she'd, you know, hit a ditch and gone flying over. And I think one baby's life, you know, so be it.
I think Casey and Christopher should both hang their heads in shame. This is a serious issue, breastfeeding while driving, and you shouldn't be so flippant about it.
What do you mean it's a serious issue?
Introduce the stories, Tim.
Can I say I have no smart-ass comment here? This is just the most absurd story I've read for the past few weeks, and I'm just imagining the logistics of such a situation.
Look, we've been through this, okay?
Mobile phone is
on the, you know, between the shoulder and head, the collarbone, that's right. I guess the baby is sort of like propped up by the thigh, maybe.
One hand and you can use the other hand.
You don't need to hold it because it just sort of like rests there, I think.
You've never held a baby, have you, Christopher?
I've held a baby, but I haven't breastfed a baby.
While on the phone. Due in part to Britain's sharp recession, a job ad for a temporary position at Twycross Zoo in England has been answered by 3,000 people, including former executives and company bosses. The job, which pays only a base wage and includes cleaning up after zoo animals among its responsibilities, was so popular that applicants caused an 8-kilometre traffic jam when they arrived for a recruitment day last Saturday. Do we expect similar rises in applications for other low-level positions?
I tend to think we do. There was one job, about a trillion people or so, was it?
They
applied for a job at Tesco's, and I mean, you know, like, Tesco's, I think it's an obvious trend, because 3,000 people, crappy job, trillion people, slightly better job. Does that follow, guys?
There's, like, a positive correlation.
Yeah.
A study approved by the Vatican has suggested that men are most likely to commit lustful sins. Women, however, are mainly occupied with pride, envy, and anger. It seems that men are the ones whose souls end up being pelted with fire and brimstone, while women's souls... are more likely to be broken on a wheel. I can't pronounce this name, Mateo. I need you to help me.
Wojciech Giertych.
A personal theologian to the Pope said there was no sexual equality when it came to sin. He said that when you look at vices from the point of view of the difficulties they create, you find that men experiment in a different way from women. Chris, would you regard yourself as a lusty person?
I would, Casey. A very lusty person. I mean, at last count, I fell in lust 13 times today. And I didn't, you know, like, half of these people are, you know, I imagined them in my head.
But the day's only 40 minutes old.
Well, look, I've got a good imagination.
You haven't even seen 13 people today, Chris.
I've seen 3 people today.
Oh, dear.
I'm feeling pretty uncomfortable
right
now.
Hello, Tim.
Casey, next story, please.
Robert Mugabe has celebrated his 85th birthday with a $250,000 party. There were 3,000 people in attendance and an 85-kilogram cake. It's believed that Mugabe had Botox injections before the party, and Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai did not attend the birthday celebrations. 85 kilos, that's pretty impressive. How much work do you think goes into making a cake that big?
Oh, well, he got Zimbabwe's best pastry chef, of course, to make it. It's the only job they're going to have for a while.
I'm not sure that's true. I mean, I heard that Lily Allen baked the cake. I read in an interview that she was doing a lot of baking, and, you know, a celebrity guest like that.
This is just, you've got a thing for Lily Allen. That's all this is.
Well, look, yeah. I said I fall in lust a lot, Kate.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he's got a thing for cake, really.
Yeah. Mm.
A Welsh town has overturned a ban on Monty Python's Life of Brian 30 years after it was released. The film was banned by a committee of church leaders in the town who said it was blasphemous for telling the story of a Jewish man who was mistaken for Jesus and crucified. It will be screened at a charity screening later this month, and two of the original Pythons, Michael Palin and Terry Jones, are expected to attend, after being invited by Sue Jones-Davies, mayor of Aberystwyth, West Wales. Sue Jones-Davies was in fact the star of the film, playing Brian's girlfriend. Does Sue Jones-Davies, as a cast member of The Life of Brian, have a conflict of interest in removing the band?
Well, I think she clearly does. I mean, she gets a name plastered around town, a little bit of publicity for a local mayor.
Look, I really don't think we should be talking about this issue. It's a non-story, and frankly, it's a Palin in the arse.
Okay. No.
That's rapid-fire news. I'm cutting you off, Mateo. You're boring.
Boo.
Lavinia Emmett-Gray is the president of the Adelaide University Union, and during O-Week, she spoke to me in a fairly wide-ranging interview. I started by asking her how her week had been thus far.
Oh, it's been a pretty epic week. I've seen a lot of people from the old days who are... been saying this is one of the best O-Weeks they've seen, so I'm pretty proud of the whole thing. It's thanks to all our awesome volunteers and our wonderful staff.
Yeah, the place has really been buzzing with all the clubs, all the sports, the clubs demonstrations, the dancing, the music, the bands. Behind the scenes, how much work goes into putting together an event like this? How many hours, how many people have you got working on it?
We have two full-time staff members, Lara, who is our marketing manager, and Leanne, who's our events coordinator. We then have a union activities chair and three orientation week directors and who are volunteers. We then have the board who volunteer their time to sell membership. But then there's literally hundreds of volunteers who come from clubs and faculty societies and different groups like Student Radio to actually help make this event so vibrant.
Have you had a good response from all of the... from all the new students, the commencing, the continuing students for, about the week?
One of the most impressive things has been the amount of students, particularly commencing students, who have come up and asked for union membership, because I think the vibrancy of the event has convinced them that the student organisation is worth participating in.
Have you had a favourite kind of moment during the week? Have you had a favourite sight by putting it on the spot?
As always, I think my favourite event would have to be the fears, and especially seeing interstate student politicians when they come down and see it, the fears, because it's an Adelaide-only event. Do you want me to explain the event?
Yeah.
Okay, so the fears are basically, we start off with White Fear on the Monday, where we have 4 litres of milk per competitor. There's normally 4 people competing, and it's whoever finishes the milk first is the winner. However, the human stomach only has the capacity for about 2 litres, which means the only way to win is to get it back up again and keep going.
It's one of the more disgusting events at O-Week. I haven't actually witnessed it yet. I'll probably have a look at it later today with the final. It doesn't seem like a pleasant event. Do you get many people volunteering to do that?
We often have, by the second or third day, we will have people we have to turn away to compete. There's something, I think, about humiliating yourself in front of a large group of people that really turns first years particularly on.
Another fairly popular event during the week is the boat races, which I believe are also another Adelaide University tradition. Can you explain just briefly what the boat races entail?
I have no idea how the boat races got their name, but basically it's a beer sculling competition with 2 teams consisting of 4 people. Each person sculls a beer one after the other, and then if you spill any beer, the person at the end, who's called the anchor, sculls too. The reason it's called boat racing is because at the beginning everyone puts thumbs on table, chins on table, and they face the water and they row. And Adelaide Uni has been doing this in colleges, in clubs, in the uni bar, and during O-Week for so many years.
So it's been a very successful event. It's been a lot of people around. You've mentioned you had good response from a lot of commencing students, especially about union membership. Are you worried about union membership? Is it picking up since the voluntary student unionism came in? Are you having good response about membership of the union?
Okay, so VSU came in and started affecting us midway through, in 06, and we tried, I think, I wasn't president at the time, obviously, and they tried a free membership package with then a $100 discount card, which failed epically. Then last year when I was president, we introduced a $20 membership fee for all students. If you don't pay that membership fee, then you're not a member. We had a pickup rate of 2,000 last year. And then this year we've had 1,100 people joined up before O Week even started. During this week we've had about another probably 1,400, which I think indicates that students are becoming aware of the package and becoming aware of what the union offers them and deciding, making the decision to actually contribute to it.
Do you think it's a matter of the package that you're offering with the $20 is actually quite a valuable package to many people? Is that driving a lot of people towards it, or is there still a large number of people coming because they want to support the union?
I think it's an incredibly good package. I mean, there's been a lot of work that's gone into developing it, but I actually think students want to contribute to their organisation, because earlier in the week I was going around getting students to sign a petition to go to Nick Xenophon, asking him to support the legislation amendment to VSU, and so many students were willing to sign on to something that would mean they were compulsorily charged $250 for services and amenities, but they were willing to do it so that they could see campus culture, particularly those students who've been around long enough to see the difference in campus culture since VSU came in. And they know that the vibrancy, the support, all of those things have really slipped away.
Our lovely union president there, Lavinia Emigray, with perhaps the equally lovely Casey at O Week.
Student radio at O Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM, as studious as you are.
Sol Trujillo, the former CEO of Telstra, just announced his retirement. Okay, he's actually technically still CEO. He retires in later, I think, June, July. But his pay came out, and this raises a wider issue about executive pay, and Tim's been looking into that. What do you...
Yeah, also I think more so, the Pacific Brands case. Pacific Brand, the iconic company responsible for brands such as jeans, and they produce uniforms for the Australian Army. Their executives...
Are they the ones that do Bond's underwear as well?
Yeah. They've recently been in the news shipping about 1,800 jobs overseas. They're taking these jobs away from Australian workers.
I assume they're fairly low-level, kind of menial jobs.
They're manufacturing.
And
manufacturing.
Tim would like to point out that it's 1,850 jobs.
Yeah, 1,850 is the figure I've got in front of me. And their executive pay packets have also come into focus in the context of this, especially... I think the government has been able to make a little bit of political hay. I think Kevin Rudd's...
Well, no, Tim. Let's not be, you know, like 13 executives I think were paid $15.4 million in 2008, and this is a company that made, you know, a loss of $150 million or so. This is not a political hay. This is a serious issue.
Well, no, but the government's made political hay out of beating up on executives who've done well and are earning a lot of money.
Are you saying executives who've done well, Tim?
Okay, well, no, they've done well for themselves. Now, whether you think they've done well in their job, perhaps not, but I think it's, you know, I'll put this out there to start with, it is a responsible business decision to be sending that kind of job to a country where it's cheaper. Not only is it better for their shareholders, who are the people they are looking at and should be the only people they are looking out for, not only is it good for them, but it's good for the consumer. It makes the products cheaper.
And I wonder what's going to happen if you offer lower salaries to people in executive positions. You're going to entice not as, executives that simply aren't as good. Companies probably going to do even worse.
You don't entice executives that aren't as good.
It is bad incentives to draw the best.
But hold on, I mean, again, we come back to the fact that this is a company making massive losses. Now, you're talking about incentives. Should the company be offering incentives, or, you know, like a significant... what was the CEO made $1.86 million last year, before tax, I'd like to point out. But, you know, is that a reasonable amount to be paying someone who, as I say, is losing a lot of money for her company?
Well, I think, and my answer to that, and this obviously goes to the wider issue of executive compensation in business, but my answer to that is whether or not you think it's reasonable is really not the point, and it's not your business, it's not my business, it's not the business of the government, it's the business of, you know, of the taxpayers and of the board of directors. And there are plenty of issues. Now, I would say this, a lot of people have made a big deal out of the $17 million of... government money that Pacific Brands have received recently, and I think we've received some press releases here at Radio Adelaide today about different unions and logistics trade competing with talking about blocking the movement of manufacturing equipment overseas because they're so unhappy with this taxpayers' money being taken with Pacific Brands.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's easy to sort of be morally indignant when you read about some of the salaries these executives are receiving, because, you know, it's just, it seems a bit ludicrous, really. But then you sort of think, if it weren't to make economic sense, you know, moving away again from sort of the moral aspect, which is a vaguer one, a more amorphous one, if it didn't make business sense to give executives these salaries, executives wouldn't get these salaries.
Can I put another question to you? And this is a related but distinct issue. How is it that, you know, the Prime Minister of Australia, Kevin Rudd, makes $330,000 a year when CEOs make... I mean, is that a good... this is an issue of incentives. Is that the way to get people, you know, like the top brass, so to speak, the best and brightest to enter politics, given disparity?
I don't know that I want politicians earning much more than that, if even that much.
No, because
there's a distinction between making an incentive to get the good people to be the politicians, to be the Prime Minister, and then just getting the people, if you offer too good a salary, that just are doing it for the money, doing it for themselves.
I'd like to say that,
frankly, if they are the best, you know, and if they're doing their job, I don't see why it's a problem. I mean, there is an established tradition, to some degree, of people, you know, avoiding politics. Recently, I think there have been some studies that suggest that people aren't keen on politics because they can make money in other sectors. And even if that's true, if they're the cleverest, you know, the smartest and the best, what we're looking for in politicians is, in my opinion, is an administrator. And so I think whether or not they're in it for the money, to a certain extent, is irrelevant.
It's a bit of a different skill set, though, being a, you know, CEO and being a politician.
Yeah, well, I think being Prime Minister is its own incentive.
Exactly, yes. Bragging rights, bragging rights.
You're listening to Student Radio on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. As delectable as you are.
Queensland's John Steele Singers there with Strawberry Wine from their mini album The Beagle and the Dove, and of course they're playing at the Adelaide Uni Oval, which is on the 14th of March.
Indeed, and if you listen to Left, Right and Centre next week at midnight, you'll be able to have the chance to win a double pass to Oval, as well as if you listen to Break It Down on Wednesday and Thursday this week at 11 p.m. You can win yourself some fancy prizes.
Yeah, well, just listen all the time, guys. And I think one more plug before we do leave you tonight. Can I just say, Lewin and Bryce, the wonderful Lewin and Bryce, have already covered on their Break It Down, which they did a great job with. The Adelaide University Fringe Club's a new club on campus. It's the opening night of its production tomorrow evening. It's called The Adventures of Stoke Mandeville, Astronaut and Gentleman. Screening at the Union Cinema. It's a level 5 Union House. Now, a concession
ticket. I'll point
tickets.
Out that, Stoke Mandeville is an astronaut and a gentleman. It's not Stoke Mandeville, an astronaut and a gentleman.
No,
that was my confusion.
There are not, in fact, two unnamed characters. Stoke Mandeville is both an astronaut and gentleman. And tickets, $10 for concession. Show starts at 6:30, goes from Wednesday the 4th to Friday the 6th. So please do come along. It promises to be a rollicking good time.
I think I should probably also point out that a certain person who was speaking about 15 seconds ago is actually in the show. That's Matteo over there. If you want to see, you know, what face is attached to that voice, do you want to speak up, Matteo?
Hello.
That
Hello,
voice.
Out
yep.
There.
Yep. Then go and see the show.
If you don't, I probably wouldn't go.
Actually, his face isn't that impressive.
Thanks, guys.
He has a good face, as they say.
It is 1 a.m. The show is over.
We do have to leave you.
We do
for
have
this
to
week.
Leave you. I would encourage you to both stay in for the BBC World Service through until 6 a.m, I believe.
Yeah.
Then I'd also encourage you to tune into Student Radio Wednesday and Thursday from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m.
I'd actually encourage you to keep listening all day. Don't stop at 6 a.m.
Yeah,
just keep going right up till 11 p.m. on
Radio
Wednesday.
Don't touch that dial, guys.
If you tune in tomorrow, you'll be able to hear Break It Down and Blue Monkey Jazz on Student Radio.
Which we're really excited about.
We're very excited about monkeys.
Especially blue monkeys. They're my favourite colour monkeys.
That scat the blues.
I'd also really love you to listen to our show again next week.
Yeah, and remember we have the Facebook, the email, you know, all that stuff that we've told you ad nauseum.
We don't have a MySpace.
And the blog.
No MySpace.
And the blog, indeed.
And the blog,
Within the next day or two, we'll have a blog going up on studentradio.wordpress.com.
That will happen, indeed.
Thank you very much, guys, for tuning in.
Yeah, it was a good show. I think it's time for us to say our goodbyes.
I'm Casey. Goodbye.
I'm Christopher. See you.
I've been Timothy.
I'm Matteo still, and have a good night, guys.
Good night. That was the first episode of Left, Right and Centre.
In podcast form.
In podcast form. Easily digestible podcast form.
I think it was very exciting. I mean, I hadn't heard that before. And everything they said was utterly hilarious.
Well, I think...
At least, especially that Chris guy. And Casey, he wasn't bad either.
Yeah, I wouldn't... I don't put much much credence on what Mateo said.
No.
I don't know who that guy thinks he is. Obviously, if you've made it this far, you've got to the end, you must have also found Chris and Casey hilarious.
Definitely.
If you did, you can either tune in next week at midnight on Tuesday on Radio Adelaide.
And hear the music.
And hear the music on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM.
I suppose, and Casey's jokes.
And my hilarious jokes. You can also try downloading the podcast again next week.
Without the music.
Without the music.
And Casey's jokes.
And without my jokes.
I guess also, I mean, we do have a Facebook group, don't we?
We do have a Facebook group, which you can get into contact with us from. If that was actually a sentence.
And a blog.
And a blog. The Facebook group is Left, Right and Centre.
The blog is...
And the blog is studentradio.wordpress.com. So blogs go up there shortly after every show during the week.
Within the next 24 hours, hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully sooner.
Yeah, the first one's up already.
First one's up already. It's brilliant. It's
possibly where you've got the link to the podcast from.
Probably. Possibly. Probably. Maybe not.
You could also email us in during the show or after the show at leftrightandcentre@live.com.au.
It isn't live.
Well, I believe that's the name of the service that offers the email. Email's not live, but...
Oh.
Oh?
I didn't know that. Can we cut that? I'm going to sound stupid, though.
Good.
Good.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.